Well, as you've been hearing, US President Donald Trump has issued another strong warning to North Korea, declaring that Americans' weapons are locked and loaded to retaliate to a possible strike from Kim Jong-un. And they are, of course, returning volleys, the North Koreans are. Here's President Trump earlier this morning taking questions on the situation.
I hope that they are going to fully understand the gravity of what I said. And what I said is what I mean. So hopefully they'll understand, Peter, exactly what I said and the meaning of those words. Those words are very, very easy to understand.
Any progress on the diplomatic back channel?
Well, we don't want to talk about progress. We don't want to talk about back channels. We want to talk about a country that has misbehaved for many, many years, decades, actually.
Well, we'd like to talk about diplomatic back channels, specifically the back channels that might be occurring between the Chinese and the North Koreans. China, of course, is seen as critical to avoid the descent that we've witnessed over the last few days towards much more overt belligerence. It seems hard to believe that what has gone back and forth, all this Sturm und Drang, was really part of the preferred script for the neighbouring and more cautious Chinese who've taken part in the debate but at a distance. So how have their foreign policy specialists reacted in public and behind the scenes to this turn of events? Dr. Jeff Raby, our former ambassador and guest commentator, observes the Chinese mood very closely and suggested in a recent writing for the Australian Financial Review that it was time for a grand bargain, maybe, between Xi Jinping and President Trump. I spoke to him earlier to let him explain. Can you just tell us first, Jeff, are there any real indications of how Beijing is viewing the so-called good cop, bad cop strategy emanating from Washington, with President Trump as bad cop and the Secretary of Defense, Jim Mattis, and Rex Tillerson being a good cop?
Well, the public face from China is, as you'd expect, they say this is a US problem. It's got very little to do with them. They say they're doing everything they can in terms of supporting UN sanctions, all of which is not true. This is a China problem. China has the biggest strategic threat and risk from a collapse of the North Korean regime. And what they would love would to go back to an earlier situation where we had six-party talks, everyone was engaging and nothing was happening, but the stability of North Korea was guaranteed. All they want is to keep the North Korean regime in place and to maintain stability on the peninsula. They fear a collapse of North Korea, which would lead to maybe a million or more refugees fanning out through Northeast China, where there is already a big ethnic Korean Chinese population. And of course, then a unified Korea would put the US on its borders.
Okay, with all of this ramped up rhetoric, do they now, in your judgment, sense that their interests are at stake?
I think that is the important development with the rhetoric and with Trump's approach. And that is to drive home the point to Beijing that the US will not accept North Korea developing a capability to attack the United States. And Trump cannot be the president on whose watch that North Korea develops a capacity to attack the United States. I think China is still probably in denial, but as Trump ramps up the rhetoric, I think they have to start to think about what can be done about the situation.
Now, this leads you to your rather bold, ambitious suggestion of the timeliness of a grand bargain between the two countries. Now, what are you getting at?
The grand bargain would be that the US undertakes not to move its troops beyond the 38th parallel, which is the current dividing line between North and South Korea, that it pulls back its troops out of South Korea, reduces its military presence in the Sea of Japan. It's currently got three carrier fleets there, takes the anti-missile system TAD out of Korea, and basically agrees and accepts, albeit tacitly, that North Korea becomes a client state of China. And in return, China has to decapitate the North Korean regime.
I mean, that would be exceptionally dramatic. That's not the way they conduct foreign policy, is it?
No, they are very strong on the principle of non-interference in other countries' affairs. What's different, though, about what's happening now is that the behaviour of the North Korean regime is undermining China's own security. So the calculus has changed dramatically for China. And again, I think the US has played this very well. They're saying it's China's problem. They've put the THAAD anti-missile defense system into South Korea. And what that does is change the nuclear deterrent balance between the US and China. They've put a third carrier fleet in the Sea of Japan. And the threat of doing something is against the North Korean regime by the US is, I think, becoming increasingly real. In those circumstances, China is facing a challenge to its own security. And I think that's the key point that we have to focus on. And to that extent, China will feel it might have to act.
Now, I think you also suggest in this piece that a part of this would be possibly a proper peace treaty. I mean, if all of this did come true, a proper peace treaty, which has never been signed, you know, it's been a sort of an armistice, I suppose. What's your judgment? How would South Korea react to that?
Well, interesting. I think South Korea is not as focused on unification in the political sense of the peninsula as many people would expect. And that's because they've watched what happened in Germany and the incredible cost to West Germany, as it was then, of unification. And I think South Korea, what they want more than political unification is more open borders, reunification of families, commercial exchange, flow of investment. And that would happen with a Chinese client state in North Korea on the basis of a peace treaty, as you mentioned.
How well connected are the Chinese into the sort of North Korean elites? I mean, that's the other thing. Is there some way, you know, you use that very dramatic term, decapitate the regime, but I mean, have they got links in there where they could partner with people who might try to overturn Kim Jong-un, the young Kim Jong-un?
No one knows. And so this is really in the realm of speculation. But the person who conducts relations with North Korea for China has been in that role for over 20 years, and he would know everyone. The military is incredibly
close. This is Wu Dawei, the chain-smoking Korean-speaking septuagenarian.
Yeah, exactly. And the military are extremely close. There's so much trade that goes on between North Korea and China. It beggars belief that the Chinese are not deeply involved in the North Korean system and in the elites. And I think, you know, we've seen Kim Jong-un, he executed an uncle who was known to be quite close to China, assassinated his half-brother in Kuala Lumpur Airport. All of this indicates that Kim Jong-un himself is very alert to the possibility that China could and might do away with him.
I'd like to play you now something that Jim Clapper, who was the former head of national intelligence in the US and has been visiting Australia, another much less dramatic suggestion about a sort of back-channel talks that could take place, he believes.
What I have suggested is that we give consideration, after due consultation with the regional powers, offering to establish what we call an intersection in Pyongyang, much like we had in Havana, Cuba for decades. Not an embassy, not even a consulate, but at least a physical presence. And I think we ought to think about a similar arrangement in Pyongyang.
Could that take place? And I mean, could China play any role in that? And might that just bring the whole thing down, the temperature down?
All of that could happen, but then you're just rewarding North Korea for bad behavior. And I think the clear indication from the US administration is the time for rewarding North Korea for bad behavior is over. Last decade, with the six-party talks, North Korea was really in its comfort zone. It had international prestige. It played that out heavily domestically. It made the regime look internationally accepted. And it still developed nuclear and weapons capacity. And I think this is the key thing that Trump has done. He has said for the first time, there will be no reward for bad behavior, and the U.S. will react if the U.S. feels that North Korea is threatening its own security.
What is the likelihood of war in your judgment?
It's very hard to say. I really don't know, because the consequences for South Korea would be awful. But as I said, I don't think Trump can be the president on whose watch North Korea can attack the United States.
And you think the Chinese now grasp that?
Yeah. And to the extent that they really believe that, then I think China will act to deal with Kim Jong-un in some way.
Incidentally, before I let you go, is it making its presence felt, as it certainly is, in Australia, this whole debate? Is that on the ground the case in Beijing or not?
With the broader public, very little, because, of course, you know, the controlled media massages all the messages, and most people just feel that this is a US-North Korean issue. I was in Shenyang, which is not far from the North Korean border, last weekend, and meeting with some foreign affairs officials there. They were basically insouciant about it.
And would there be channels between, you know, the sorts of liaison that would need to happen between, at the very highest levels, between Washington and Beijing, for this sort of grand bargain you're talking about to even be hatched? Do they exist?
Oh, yes. I mean, the engagement between Washington and Beijing is very deep and very high level and continuous. One thing we often miss in Australia, and Australian journalists, with respect, Gerald Reed, just don't get, is how deep the US-China relations are, how multi-level they are, and the depth of the discussions and engagement that goes on constantly. It's a good thing for us because it means there's much more stability in the US-China relationship than we recognise or understand. And on this issue, there would be constant engagement.
And as you say, that's why trust, they'd have to trust each other. It's what's the most important assets in foreign policy, but increasingly in short supply.
And if I could just make the point, that is the problem with the grand bargain. It's very difficult for Beijing to believe that the US would keep its side of the bargain. That is the hardest thing about the grand bargain. It's not, I think, China's capacity to get rid of Kim Jong-un. It's China's willingness to accept assurances from the United States.
Goodness. Okay, Jeff Raby, thank you very much indeed for joining us.
My pleasure, Geraldine. Lovely to speak to you.
And Jeff Raby is CEO of the advisory firm that he set up, Jeff Raby and Associates, and a former Australian ambassador to China.